Kia ora koutou katoa and welcome to this Education Gazette Tukutuku Kōrero podcast. I'm Michaela Morris. Today we will be hearing from Emeritus Professor Russell Bishop from Waikato University, who has written a book called Leading to the Northeast. He's speaking to a group of people interested in how schools might use the ideas in his book to implement the common practice model.
So thank you very much for your invitation. Thanks for being here. And this is great.
Tell us what Incy Wincy Spider has to do with why you wrote this book.
Okay. You know the story of Incy Wincy Spider, climbed up the spout, and you know this sort of thing. And it was always put forward to us as a kid that Incy Wincy Spider was a hero. He was perseverance, tenacity, pluck, right? And he would go back, he got washed out, and he had to go back and carry on and do it again. But in fact, the reality of it was he's an idiot. Because he keeps doing the same thing over and over again, expecting to reach the top. But he would never reach the top, because every time he got up, it's about, whoosh, he got washed out again. So that's what it's got to do with this. That's why. So why, what we're doing currently, the message is, what we're doing currently is not working, and yet we continue to do it. And we get frustrated and angry and upset, and we look around to blame people, and you folk are always very good targets for blame. Parents are good targets, kids are good targets, teachers are good targets. But blame is a really unproductive activity. It produces nothing except misery and more frustration. And so Incy Wincy Spider is a great image for that. So trying to use a bit of humour and a bit of something familiar to everybody to get these really important points across is that don't look at the deficiencies of people, look at the potentialities. Build on the potentialities that people have got. Build on what they bring. And basically, the point you made this morning, I think, is so important. I keep on saying, this is a profession, and if we professionals don't blame people, the doctor whose patient dies on the operating table doesn't say, well, your sister died under my help 2 years ago. It obviously runs in the family. You people, you die all the time, you know. Doctors don't say that. They say, whoops, I didn't do something properly. And it's my care and attention. It's my fidelity. It's my truthfulness to the relationship that I have with my patient that I'll do things in ways that we know work. So it's trying to do things. It's trying to get those messages across that we are professionals, and that it's up to us to look to our practice if things are not going well. A friend of mine is a surgeon, and his procedures has to do a whole lot of stuff. And I was talking to him, he said, so what's the heart of the book? And I said, well, it's about fidelity. It's about sticking to your knitting and knowing what you're doing, etc. And I said, sort of like you have to do. And he said, yes. If we deviate by a couple of standard deviations away from the procedure, we're in trouble. If something goes wrong and somebody comes back and says that, you know, this person died or something like that, then, and if we've deviated, then that'll be the source of the inquiry. Whereas we don't expect that of teachers. Mm-hmm. And if we did expect it of teachers, we don't support them sufficiently in schools to ensure that they will be able to do it with the fidelity that's necessary.
Yeah.
So again, it's easy to blame teachers and say, well, you're not teaching properly. But if some teachers are not being taught how to teach reading properly nowadays in some of the pre-service education programs that are being run, some people are not getting. But I want to come back to a point you made before, because I think it was really, really good. And that is, what is it? What's the really big thing that makes a difference for teaching practice? In Te Kotahi Tanga, we would take teachers to a workshop for 4 days, and we would work with them about the key thing about creating a context for learning, anti-deficit theorizing, and this sort of stuff, no deficit explanations, potentialities, expectations, caring for kids as culturally located people, and all the stuff we did. And then we'd get them into the interactions that we know from John Hattie's work that has the biggest impact upon learning. We would do a lot, and we'd go into the classroom afterwards, and it didn't change. You were probably involved in this at that point. Yeah, I think it were. And there was no discernible change in teaching practice as a result of it. What we would do is we'd then go in and we'd give teachers, say, right, have a go at implementing what was called the effective teaching profile then. And we'd say, right, have a go at doing it and we'll come and have a look and see how well you go. And this is not to test you. This is just to see how you go. And we'll give you some feedback and some suggestions, feed forward, as to where you can go. That's what made the difference.
Mm.
And after they did that, it changed. Their practice changed.
Being alongside them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In a non-judgmental way.
Yeah.
We were not allowed to use it for appraisals. You were not allowed. It was private. You were not allowed to tell the next door neighbour. You're not allowed to,
Tell the principal.
Tell the principal. No, it was certainly forbidden to use it for anything else than improving the practice. And once you established that, because it was a relational issue of trust, once you'd established that relational trust with the teacher, you could then, they would then allow you to critique their lessons and offer them suggestions on how they can improve it. And lo and behold, it changed their practice. Mm. That's what did it. So all the telling in the world won't make a difference.
And neither will somebody watching a video of somebody else doing it.
No.
Because they can't then put that back into their own space and say, what do I look like when I'm doing it? And you have that because you over-assimilate the things that you think you're doing and the things that you think you heard.
Yep. And also the other thing is that we know from lots of research been going on since the 80s, 90s, is that teachers can't do this stuff on their own. It's too difficult to become a professional educator on your own. You can't imagine people becoming a doctor or a physiotherapist or a lawyer or on their own, you know, saying, here's a book, get on with it. You know, it's too difficult. They need to be supported. And I went to a physiotherapist recently and she said, do you mind if someone comes in and looks, observes what I'm doing? And she'd been a physiotherapist for 40 years. She said, I'm still getting people come in and support me, give me feedback, feed forward. So it's the first part is people have got to learn about it. They've got to know what they're trying to do, the common practice model. They've got to know what it consists of. They've then got to have an opportunity to have a go at it.
Mm.
And someone's got to go in and give them some feedback on how well they're going and give them some direction. That's the role of leadership. Of team leaders with teachers, principals with team leaders in schools. They've then got to have a crack at evaluating how well they're going. And you're calling them teacher learning meetings. I call them in my book, I call them Northeast meetings. Why I've called them Northeast meetings is because, and this is what I was suggesting this morning, that you call them, common practice model meetings. Because the purpose is to implement the common practice model.
Mm.
The purpose of the Northeast meeting is to implement the Northeast teaching profile. So if you're instituting that third bit of PLD I'm talking about, if you're going to institute in the school a support system of infrastructure that is going to support teachers to learn how to implement the common practice model, then you've got to have something that focuses on the common practice model. So call them common practice model meetings. They're meetings where teachers get together to interrogate the impact of their practice on student outcomes and modify their practice accordingly. And the modification will be related to the common practice model. It won't be related to anything that anybody's just thought of. You can't come into these meetings and saying, oh, I've had a good idea that we all need to do such and such. No. Is it in the common practice model? Or in my case, is it in the Northeast leaders teaching model? Am I, for example, here's someone, they bring the data along, kids are not learning how to read. What's happening? Are we creating a context which is a family-like context for them, which makes it conducive for them to learn? Are we doing that? How well are we doing that? We need some observation to see if we're doing it properly. See, I've had teachers tell me, I say things like, you know, one of the characteristics of a family-like context for learning is aroha. And the teacher said to me, oh, we love all of our kids. said, but the problem is Maori kids can't see it. There's a cultural mismatch here. You're giving them a message that you have aroha for them, but they aren't getting the message that you have. They're getting a message that you don't like them. So it's a mismatch. There's nothing wrong with you, nothing wrong with them. There's a mismatch. You need some support from a third party to give you some help about how you might go about demonstrating that you care for their learning. And the third part of it all is you need a means in the schools whereby teachers can focus and leaders can focus upon the collaborative decision making about the impact of the common practice model on students' outcomes.
Yeah.
And if it's not having an impact,
yeah,
why not, and how can we improve our practice?
Yeah.
That's what professionals do.
Yeah.
How can we improve our practice by looking at the outcomes? Then the fourth thing that you need is you need a means of a leader monitoring their own practice on the effect of their practice on how well the people whose learning they're responsible for, in this case teachers, for example, how well are they doing? And for teachers to do that with their students, this is professional. This is what professional practice is. So that's the part that matches the medics.
Mm. Why is it called the Northeast? What does the Northeast mean? Talk to us a little bit about
that. Right, okay, the Northeast. The Northeast is the upper right-hand quadrant of any graph.
Mm.
Any you know, XY graph. So you've got a horizontal axis, I can never remember which one it is, and the vertical axis, and it's you've got low to high, and it's the upper right-hand quadrant.
So we've on our horizontal axis, we've got relational qualities. Yep.
Yeah.
And then on the vertical axis, we've got teaching skills. So is that?
Yes.
Yeah. So what some people would say that the relational practice is a teaching skill. So what sits in the teaching skills axis?
Oh, what types of things? All right. I'll go back a wee bit too.
Yeah.
And we did a follow-up. I mean, we had a research assistant who worked with us, Lani Teddy, young Māori woman. Mm-hmm. She went into schools in 2004-05 to see. I asked her to go and have a look and see if there was if the pattern remained the same, because we'd done it in 2002, I think it was, and then 2004 and 2005 I asked her to do it again just to see, were we right, just to verify it, you know, just that, I suppose, triangulation, if you like. And she did. She found the same thing. We're looking at the data. And the students by this stage had a good sophisticated understanding of what teaching was about. They knew the teachers who could, for example, in the upper left-hand quadrant, they knew the teachers who had high teaching skills, but they didn't care if the kids were there or not.
Mm-hmm.
The Maori kids told us this, you know. And they said there was these teachers who low. They don't care if we're there or not, and they can't teach for nuts anyway. And there was this group over here.
There's not too many in there.
Not now there wasn't, but there was a stack when we started, you know. But then they said there's a lot of people in this area, and that is they are the ones who care for us, but don't teach in a way that we can learn.
Yeah.
And we got to Kōtai Tanga did that, got the movement across. We got the horizontal movement.
Yeah.
But I don't think we got the vertical.
Yeah.
The vertical. So what's the vertical movement? What's on this line? What's on here is using students' prior knowledge. It's the whole formative assessment stuff.
Yeah.
And it's also providing feedback and feed forward on learning. And it's also co-constructing learning. How together might we solve this problem? How together might we do it? Power sharing strategies, cooperative learning approaches, narrative pedagogy approaches. All those sorts of things, the stuff that you've got in the common practice model now. These are the strategies.
Yeah.
This is creating the context.
Yeah.
When James Ladbrook did this analysis for us, he also did a probability analysis. What's the probability of an X and Y being correlational? It's actually the probability of a teacher, as a teacher, moves from low levels of Whanaunatanga, family-like relationships, context for learning. As they move from low levels of that to high levels, as they learn those skills, they are teaching skills, quite right. As they learn those skills, they are more able to use the skills that we know from low level of teaching skills, that is stand at the front of the room and give behavioural feedback, do that again and you're in trouble. To high levels of teaching skills, which is providing feedback on learning, for example, co-constructing learning and so on. So it's actually a probability curve is exponential, which shows that as people get better at learning how to create a family-like context for learning, they are more able to use those teaching strategies that are fundamental to your common practice model. So one of the big findings out of Koteita was that this here is fascinating. There's nobody in that area that they've got fancy high teaching skills, but they don't know how to relate to people. And we asked the kids this, and the kids verified it. We said, are there teachers in that area? And they said, yes, there are. There are some who really have, they're really fancy teachers, but as I said, they don't care if we're there or not. So we don't go to those classrooms. Let's get rid of those folk. These folk here, they said, we don't learn there either because they don't know what they're doing. But these folk here, we do. They don't know how to teach, but these folk do. And that's, if I say one last thing as they nail the lid on me, I'll be saying, you do realise that you have to create the right context for learning, so the right relational context for learning that will enable you to use those strategies that we know make a difference. Mm. Because if you don't, you'll end up in that category.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you just think that being nice to Māori kids is going to get them learning, well, you'll end up in that category.
You still hear people talk about the most important thing is to develop the relationships. Right? Yes, do.
Yes.
And don't stop there. Don't do the work as well.
Yeah. Exactly right. And yeah. What I say to people is that it's the relationship which enables you to do the work.
Yeah, it's not the work in and of itself.
No, and you build the relationship through doing the work.
And it feeds back into the
relationship.
And it's iterative. It keeps going backwards.
You made an important point. I thought it was interesting this morning around fidelity, and you know, I kind of thought that you were using it in a different context than the one that we've often used it in, which isn't the context of a relationship. Mm. But actually you said that it's both, because it's got to be, we need to have fidelity in our relationships with kids and to make sure that we continue. And then we also need the fidelity in terms of implementation and fidelity to those important ideas. So I thought that was, I hadn't thought about that this morning, and I thought it was a really good idea, and then
the two definitions actually coalesce as well, because by implementing the practices with the fidelity that we know is necessary,
you implement fidelity.
You're maintaining the fidelity of
it goes on both of those.
You see, I think the word fidelity has got its own connotation. So I think about some of the past things that we've tried to implement with fidelity, which is really lockstep. Mm. And that's not what you're talking about. You're saying there are some practices and some things which are high impact, you're going to do them and la, 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 la. And they will always be mediated by the relational aspects in here. So when you think about tikanga going on to marae, yes, you can say there's going to be a this and a that for something else, but how it looks on each marae might be slightly different.
And it's accepted.
I think that's kind of at the heart of what you were trying to say.
Isn't that a good way to put it?
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it, isn't it?
You found things were effective when you went in and you were alongside teachers and you were observing them and responding to them in a way that is a relational act.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what leadership wrong. Leadership is, as I said before, you're doing with the relation, the actions between a teacher and a student are the same as between a teacher and a team leader, for example, team leader and a school principal. It's that. You have to determine what you want, and then you have to actually orientate all your actions towards it. And then make sure that the actions that you're orientating towards it are being implemented with fidelity. As simple as that. It's as simple or as complex as that, you know.
Julie? Oh, kia ora. Thanks, Rachel. I just probably have an observation or a comment as well. And as I've been engaging with your book, and it's fantastic, and it's what really resonates with me is sort of putting some different lenses on that, and I'm sort of coming from the lens of, you know, learners who have been, I guess, historically marginalised, or and particularly thinking about the tendency to blame or to take that deficit focus based upon preconceived notions, whether it's, and I'm probably thinking about young disabled people who might come with a diagnosis or something, and so that goes before them, and quite often teachers meet that learner with a deficit thinking based upon what they think they know. So for me, it was sort of really resonating with that significant barriers that exist for a lot of our learners in our schools. So, yeah, kia ora. It was just a reflection, Anna, going, yes.
I quite agree with you. I'd go as far, Julie, as to say that if you can't address that within the system without becoming, let's beat up the teachers. And let's find someone else to blame. Mm. If you can't deal with that in a way that says, like, look, you may well be right. They may have some amazing issues that are problematic for learning. But what do they have?
Mm.
If you can't shift people and just sort of say, you may well be right, but can we look at it another way? Can we look at their potential? Can we look at their potentialities they have? What can we draw upon that might assist with learning and so on? If we can't get that sorted, then we've really got big problems.
Probably time to say goodbye to Russell. Yeah. He needs to go to his grandchildren.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming online.
Ngā mihi nui to Emeritus Professor Russell Bishop and to everyone who took part in that discussion about the ideas in his book Leading to the North East. More information about the Common Practice Model is on the Ministry of Education's website at www.education.govt.nz. If you'd like to hear more Education Gazette Tukutuku Kōrero podcasts, visit educationgazette.podbean.com. For all our latest stories, head to gazette.education.govt.nz.